Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Stephanie, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Connect Education Workshop, Managing Eye and Vision Changes Related to Cancer Treatments. Now, this is actually a very important topic, and I must say that it's one that we offer as a workshop once a year, but would like to offer more often because it is a topic that is not as much discussed in the treatment of cancer, and it's a treatment side effect that you actually don't hear about a lot, and I think you'll find a lot of very useful information today on the call, perhaps things that you've experienced, but really no one's really ever asked you about them. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations. And because of the collaboration and all of your interest in this topic, we have over 650 participants on the call today, and you come from all over the United States. And we also have international participants from Canada, India, South Africa, Turkey, and the United Kingdom. So it really is a credit to all of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. Now, today's program was supported by the Aline Roos Memorial Trust, and we really want to thank them for their support of this program today. It really is a very important one, and they have been supporting this program for a number of years now, so we thank them for that. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Stuart Fleischman. Dr. Fleischman is Founding Director, Cancer Support Services, Continuum Cancer Centers of New York, Accreditation Surveyor, American College of Surgeons Commission on Cancer. And Dr. Fleischman is going to present an overview of eye and vision changes related to cancer treatments, causes and risk factors, and discussion of common eye and vision changes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Fleischman.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and I agree this is a topic that we really don't talk about much, and we need to, as so many more people are undergoing cancer treatment, different kinds of cancer treatment, compounds and chemotherapies and in targeted therapies that we couldn't have anticipated years ago, new types of radiation therapy. We are faced with giving advice about a number of problems that may happen in the eye. Some may just be happening from aging that get worsened by cancer treatment or some due to the cancer treatment, and we need to rely on some very smart ophthalmology colleagues who understand a little bit about these cancer treatments so that we can provide the best care for someone and make sure that as many people as possible go well into a long-term survivorship with their vision, serving them as well as possible. Vision is so important to us in the amount of information we take in and how we live our daily lives. So when thinking about this, there are a series of things that patients and families sometimes bring to our attention during cancer treatment. And they would include, but not in any particular order, tearing. Tearing is something that we sometimes take for granted. We don't realize when it doesn't happen, and we're very aware of it when it does. But certain types of treatment can actually cause the tears to be there in too much quantity. So we do find that we're tearing too much, or our eyes are excessively dry. And excessively dry eyes can bring a whole host of problems how the eye works, particularly in the corneas, and I leave our ophthalmology colleagues to discuss that. Number of people are sometimes allergic to certain types of chemotherapy, not necessarily the chemotherapy itself, but often the chemicals that are used to preserve it, or a number of the separate medicines that we use to reduce nausea and pain, and we need to really make sure that if someone seems to be having an inflammatory reaction in their eyes or on their eyelids, that we pay attention to it so that, again, people are as comfortable as possible and we can preserve vision to the best of our abilities as long as possible. There are certain things that we know that radiation can also do, and we need to address that, whether it's radiation to the head and neck cancer or whole brain radiation. We need to pay attention to those issues also. Some people complain about blurry vision. That's maybe, if I had to think about the most common thing I would hear about, it's that. Often it's not the cancer or the chemotherapy or the radiation therapy, but it is often the pain medicines and the nausea medicines that we know temporarily blur vision, and we need to be able to help with patients and families sort that out. Some people say their vision doesn't seem to be as sharp as it was before, not necessarily blurry, but they have to squint, or their vision isn't as strong as it was before. Again, that's something we need to rely on our colleagues to help iron out, because vision does change over time, but vision can also change from cancer and cancer treatment. Many patients and families ask us about if they're getting cataracts during their chemotherapy, or if their chemotherapy or radiation therapy is making cataracts worse. It is something we are concerned about. Some of the medicines that we use, particularly steroid medicine, may make cataract development quicker, and again, something we need to address with our ophthalmology colleagues. As we are always concerned about infection during a time of chemotherapy and radiation therapy, when our bodies are less often able to fight off infection, our resistance is lower because of the effect on our immunologic system, especially our white blood cells. We do see infections during cancer treatment, and again, that's something that our oncology colleagues are used to treating with oral antibiotics or intravenous antibiotics. But when it comes to antibiotics that are in drop form, we often don't know which is the best or what to use, and we need to rely on our ophthalmology colleagues again for that. Some people, when they lose their hair from chemotherapy or radiation therapy, think about the effect of losing their eyebrows and their eyelashes. And again, that's something we need to be able to know more about, maybe advise people about, sometimes warn people about, and give them some ideas about what to do to keep the edge of the eyelids infection-free as well as inflammation-free and feeling comfortable during chemotherapy and radiation therapy. So those are the kinds of things we hear about. Some of them we can handle on our own, but many of them are best done by referral to an ophthalmologist in our neighborhoods or at our institutions, at our cancer centers, who are really knowledgeable about the overlap between a cancer treatment and eye problems. I believe that's a sort of a general overview of the kinds of things we'll be discussing on our call today, and I turn this back to Dr. Messner and our colleagues.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Fleischman, for really setting the stage for today's program and really identifying some of these key issues. And our next speaker is Dr. Stella Kim, and Dr. Kim is Joe M. Green, Jr., Professor of Clinical Ophthalmology, Roos Department of Ophthalmology and Visual Science, University of Texas Health, Medical School of CSEC Eye Clinic. And Dr. Kim is an ophthalmologist, and she is going to be addressing tips to manage dry or watery eyes, loss of eyelashes and eye infections, recognizing changes in vision and field of vision, floaters and flashing lights, what to do, and how eye products can help you cope with eye and vision changes. It's really my pleasure to turn this program over now to Dr. Kim.
Thank you very much for having me on the program. As Dr. Fleischman outlined the spectrum of ocular pathology that can be experienced by our cancer patients, I will lead this discussion by simply saying, when in doubt, check it out, because all of these symptoms can be representing something very innocuous and that's treatable and reversible to something that's very serious, irreversible vision loss. So I always say, when in doubt, check it out. Go seek your ophthalmology specialist, or definitely tell your oncologist. So I've been charged with discussing how to manage dry eyes or watery eyes, and the things that Dr. Messner just mentioned. I will say dry eyes in cancer patients is probably one of the most common ocular side effects that can be experienced by our cancer patients. Chemotherapy, radiation to that eye or eye socket area can certainly make lacrimal gland that produces tears to dry up, typically temporarily. And it is good to always use preservative-free artificial tears. You can buy these over-the-counter without a prescription. And I would say that thinking about it as you are using lotion for your eyes. You can't overdo it. And because you want to use it frequently, I would recommend that you use preservative-free types, and there are many, many brands available on the market. So it doesn't matter what you choose. It's that you choose the preservative-free type and use it often. Watery eyes can also be actually a symptom of dry eyes, believe it or not. Your eyes are trying to wet themselves, so therefore you just feel like they're always watering. So watery eyes, while it can be due to tear duct system that doesn't drain the tears off the surface of your eye, most commonly is going to be due to dryness. So again, cool artificial tears, using them 3-4 times a day will certainly help you. There are chemotherapy and radiation certainly can cause watery eyes where the tear duct system is stenotic or is narrowed. And oculoplastics surgeons can certainly help our patients with this problem. You have to remember that ophthalmology has 9 subspecialties, so we take care of very specific subspecialties of the eye and the eye socket. Loss of lashes, it's probably just good to know that if it's due to chemotherapy, it's going to be reversible, and that, you know, using warm compress will always help with the sensation of your eyes, and you can do this morning and at night. But certainly, as Dr. Fleischman mentioned, eyelashes and keeping the eyelids clean is always going to be helpful in preventing eye infections. Eye infections can be common, not so much in bacterial infections, but certainly viral reactivation of eye infections are commonly seen. So when patients have history of fever blisters, believe it or not, these viral infections can manifest in the eyes as well. So, quote-unquote, pink eyes are not always made the same. So, again, when in doubt, go and check it out and have your ophthalmologist evaluate your eyes. Recognizing changes in vision, I think oftentimes we're surprised to see patients walk in and have profound vision loss in one of their eyes, and patients may not even notice this. It's because they're so functional with just the other eye. So in some ways, it's a good idea to always check your vision with one eye at a time, just making sure that you are doing well in both eyes. There are things that can affect the visual field in your eyes, especially for cancer patients who have brain cancers. The visual field can be affected, and depending on how it needs to be treated, that field of vision may or may not be reversible. Patients who experience floaters or flashing lights, these are, believe it or not, very common. And as we age, we can have flashing lights and a little bit of floaters. That is due to vitreous, that's the gel inside the eyes, coming apart, and that's common. But 9 out of 10 is not a problem. But because retinal detachment can have the same symptoms, we need to have patients come in and have a dilated examination to make sure that retina is going to be intact, there's no hole, there's no detachment. That needs to be addressed immediately. And there are, as Dr. Fleischman mentioned, these targeted therapy, immunotherapy, and the variety of newer cancer treatment that can affect patients' visual symptoms, including flashing lights. And one such example is maybe non-small cell lung cancer patients who are put on new tyrosine kinase inhibitor that's been approved, cruxotinib, and patients have flashing lights. They have blurry vision, and fortunately, these things are reversible, and they do not have any retinal problems associated with it. So sometimes just an evaluation and reassurance is all you need. And finally, what products out there can help you? As I mentioned before, preservative-free artificial tears, whatever brand you choose, will always help you. And in fact, putting them in the refrigerator and cooling them down will actually help you more. It'll cool your eyes and make your vision feel a little bit more clear as you're going through your chemotherapy and radiation therapy. So with that, I will turn it back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Kim. That was so informative and really outstanding. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Marr. And Dr. Marr is Associate Attending Surgeon, Ophthalmic Oncology Service, Department of Surgery, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Dr. Marr is going to address the key role of your eye care provider, sharing information about your cancer and its treatment with your eye care practitioner, and ophthalmology assessment and care before and after treatment. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Marr.
Thank you, Carol. So I'd like to talk about the key role of your eye care provider in your cancer treatment. It's kind of important to, I'd have to say, summarize everything as communication. A lot of the times, your centers, cancer centers, may not have a dedicated ophthalmic oncology department or even an in-house ophthalmologist. So your outside eye care provider needs to have some communication, and they're not used to having a full-time oncology load of patients. So the first thing that's really important is to communicate for a couple reasons. One, there's certain immune status things that can happen with your body where your immune system isn't working well. And if you inform the ophthalmologist of that, they can be wary of any things that they see that may be attributed to that. Also, different medications that you're on is very important to communicate your cancer medications to your ophthalmologist, because certain medications, as Dr. Kim pointed out, have certain effects on the eye. And if you look at all the chemotherapies that are out there, almost all of them have some section or some type of effect on the eye. And so your eye care provider kind of needs that information to kind of help you attribute some of your symptoms or signs to either the medication or use preventative measures to try to help you have good vision. And then the other thing is sometimes cancer, even though it's in your body, can be in your eye as well. And we can, as eye care providers, take a look and assess, you know, if people have metastatic disease into their eye, we can actually see how the chemotherapy is working by observing the lesions in the eye and their effect. And we can see these changes much quicker and more easily than like an MRI scan, because the changes detectable on an MRI scan are much bigger to be picked up on an MRI scan, where when we look in, we can actually see these lesions and measure them much more sophisticatedly, and that can give your oncologist feedback on your overall treatment. But overall, the key is to communicate the different medications to your eye care provider. We've seen different chemotherapies cause little retinal detachments. We can see if your platelets are gone, little hemorrhages in the back of the eye. And if you don't have communication of your medication and your underlying disease, the eye care professional is going to have a harder time to figure out things and help you. And vice versa, the cancer people need to know if you have any underlying eye diseases like cataracts that may affect their vision, and they want to know if your vision is down because of a normal cataract or whether it's something that they're doing that's affecting the vision. Those are kind of the key communication things that you want to communicate with your eye care provider. The dry eye symptoms, again, all those things are good to inform both your cancer care provider and the eye care professional of what to do. Let's see. There are some there's some radiation that can cause different changes in the eye as well. Depending on where your cancer is and if you're getting radiation around the head and neck area, that's can have a big effect on the status of the lacrimal glands. And that kind of, you know, if you really have to have one take-home thing is really just, you need to have a feedback between your eye care provider and your oncologist. And I think that's pretty much it for that.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Marr. That really is so important, that communication piece between your oncologist and your ophthalmology team. Very important. Thank you. Thank you very much. And our next speaker is Dr. Dan Gumbos. Dr. Gumbos is Associate Professor and Section Chief, Section of Ophthalmology, Department of Head and Neck Surgery, Division of Surgery, University of Texas, MD Anderson Cancer Center, Associate Professor, Ophthalmology, Baylor College of Medicine, Ophthalmology. And Dr. Gumbos is going to address the role of the multidisciplinary team, oncologist, ophthalmologist, and low vision rehabilitation therapist, clinical trials, so how research contributes to eye care, eye vision care, and communicating with your healthcare team. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Gumbos.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the opportunity to work with the panel today. I really want to focus today on initially the role of the multidisciplinary team, and like all aspects of cancer, when it comes to your eye, the key here again is how the team communicates with each other and really works together as a team dealing with another aspect of your cancer management. And in this case, really the key for the eye practitioner to provide the best care that they can as it relates to your eye symptoms is having a direct means of communication with all the oncologists that are part of your care, whether it's the medical oncologist, the radiation oncologist, or perhaps other surgical oncologists that have been part of your overall cancer management. For many patients that are being treated at tertiary cancer centers, there is often an associate ophthalmologist or ocular oncologist. And for many of us, this is sort of the ideal scenario simply because the ophthalmologist has direct access to all the medical records. They understand exactly the complexity of your treatments, your radiation plans, and more importantly, and perhaps most importantly, any specific treatments or chemotherapeutic agents that you may be on. For patients that are not being treated at a tertiary cancer center or where there isn't an ophthalmologist in-house or sort of in the same hospital setting, I would strongly encourage the patient to speak to their primary medical oncologist and ask them if they have a specific eye practitioner, or specific ophthalmologist that they work with. Many people get their primary ophthalmic or ocular care from optometry or people that don't work routinely in the cancer setting. And this is a unique scenario where, as has been pointed out, the specialty of eye care is very specific. It's been already pointed out that there are 9 different areas of subspecialty care in ophthalmology, and if you really want to get the right answers to your questions, you really need someone who is routinely proficient, routinely deals with the complexity of the patients who generally have cancer. Now, if you're going to see a physician who's outside of your normal of the system that the medical oncologist works with, I can't emphasize enough the importance of bringing with you and making sure that the ophthalmologist understands all the specifics of your care. What do I mean by that? What type of cancer you have? Is there a specific pathology? Is there a specific stage that you have? If you've been on treatment, if you've been on chemotherapy, know the medications that you're on, know their names, know the cycles that you're on. If there's a treatment protocol that has a specific name to it, make sure you have all that information. If you've received radiation therapy to a specific area, helps us a lot to know what areas were actually treated, when they were treated, how many cycles, what radiation dose. And it's clear that you may not know all this information off the top of your head, but you can certainly get the records and bring them with you ahead of time. Because if the eye care practitioner has that information right in front of them, it really helps significantly allow them to come to the correct diagnosis as it relates to your specific situation. And also, because MRIs, et cetera, may be very helpful, especially if we have MRIs of the brain or the head and neck region, if you have those scans and the ophthalmologist doesn't have direct access to it, bring them to the office because that information can also be very helpful. And it's not always clear up front from your symptoms which of this information the ophthalmologist is going to want. So, again, access to all this information, understanding what's helpful is really key. Now, some patients may have permanent visual disabilities from their cancer care, whether it's related to treatment to the eye itself or to other adjacent systems. Sometimes this can affect the ability to see in 3 dimensions. Sometimes this can affect peripheral vision. And I'd like to encourage patients to know that sometimes we're not able to restore their vision, but there are mechanisms to improve their quality of life and work with what we call low vision experts to address their visual impairment and improve their quality of life. And so if there's a scenario where secondary effects are affecting vision permanently and there isn't something that the ophthalmologist can do about it, see if an appropriate referral to a low vision expert may give you the occupational therapy and the physical therapy necessary to address that visual impairment. Now, the other topic that I've been asked to speak about are clinical trials, and many of those in the cancer community are aware of clinical trials or have been perhaps placed on clinical trials. And for many scenarios, these are either newer drugs or drugs that are being combined in a way that have not historically been used in their cancer management. And so it may be a little off-putting for some patients to suddenly see that they're going to or have been referred to an eye care practitioner because we want to monitor your vision. And patients may be worried, well, is this drug or these new drugs, are they going to affect my vision? It might. But the key here is that you're under the care of an experienced individual who's going to monitor you for any ophthalmic potential complication. Many times we will start actually seeing the patients before the drug has even been started so that if there's any change, we can pick it up and address it with the medical oncologist. The point that I would like to make sure that all patients are aware of is if you're going to be on a clinical trial, talk to the medical oncologist who's in charge of that trial in detail. And if there is any concern for vision, ask them up front and say, okay, what are the known or potential toxicities or complications or visual implications to this drug? Usually the ophthalmologist is seeing you ahead of time to make sure whether you're eligible or not eligible to be on that trial. And sometimes we may see certain things in the eye and say, you know what? This is not the best trial. These are not the best drugs for this patient, and perhaps we should exclude this patient from the clinical trial to minimize the risk of eye complications. There are a lot of new medications out there, particularly the targeted chemotherapy and what we call biologics, and many of these have associated visual symptoms that we can't always predict or did not even necessarily anticipate when the drugs were placed on protocol. So I would encourage people that if you're on a clinical trial and if you're on any of these sort of agents where concern or observation of your eye symptoms is important, make sure to tell the medical oncologist immediately if you have any visual symptom, even if you think it's minor, because in those scenarios, we're going to have a very low threshold to ask you to come in and be checked out, even if it's something small. So that's sort of the end of my time there, but I think you know, the key thing you're hearing from all of us is communication and low threshold to being checked out for even what may seem the most innocuous of symptoms.
Well, that was excellent, Dr. Gumbel. That's really outstanding. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well, and really important issues to be aware of for everyone on this call, so thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Caroline Edwin. Ms. Edwin is an oncology social worker, and she is our Cancer Care Online Support Group Program Director. And Ms. Edwin is going to address cancer-free psychosocial programs and services and the role of support groups. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Ms. Edwin.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's a pleasure to be part of the call today. And I would like to start by speaking about the importance of creating a support network when you're diagnosed with cancer and how cancer care can be a part of that network. There are many ways that we help. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that provides free professional support services to anyone affected by cancer. Cancer Care programs include individual counseling, support groups, education about resources and how to navigate the healthcare system, practical help, and some limited financial assistance. All of our services are delivered by master's level oncology social workers and are completely free of charge. Oncology social workers are trained in how a diagnosis of cancer affects a person and his or her family and friends, and are experienced in helping people to manage the emotional, physical, and financial challenges that arise after a diagnosis. adjusting to and dealing with the diagnosis is an important part of the healing process. Asking for help by joining a support group or by contacting a social worker for counseling is a sign of strength. Cancer Care offers face-to-face groups in our local offices in the New York City area, as well as telephone and online groups. These groups offer a unique opportunity to speak with other people connected or impacted by cancer, along with the help of a cancer care social worker to facilitate the group. Sharing information and understanding with others in similar situations can be a powerful experience. Group members offer encouragement and a sense of community that can provide you with additional support and guidance. These connections help lessen the isolation that many people with cancer experience. As we've learned from today's program, there's a lot of information to digest and make sense of. Our social workers can help you understand what all of this means for you and your family. A cancer care social worker can help you prioritize and consider the questions you might want to ask to get the answers and information you need. Please remember that you are not alone. Cancer care services are here to help. So please do contact us at 1-800-813-4673 or log on to our website at www.cancercare.org for more information about our oncology social work support. Thank you so much for your attention and the opportunity to speak today.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Edlin. That was really excellent and really wonderful review of the services of cancer care. And now we do have time for questions. I want to thank all of our speakers for really allowing that to happen. So I'm going to ask Stephanie to bring all of our speakers on board, and then if you would explain to the audience, Stephanie, how to queue up for questions. And we're going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. And if we don't get your question, I will let you know exactly how to get your questions answered at the end of the call. But let's see if we can take most of them right now. But I do recognize that you may have questions later on, so we want to be sure you have a connection here. Stephanie?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking ask a question. Our first question comes from Emil S. Your line is open.
As a 64-year-old male cancer survivor, one, is there any way to stop the progression of cataracts if they're already starting? And two, why refrigerate eye drops, and can I refrigerate them even after I stop my cancer therapy?
Very well. Actually, Neil, thank you. Good to have you on the call. Thank you for those questions. Dr. Kim, would you like to start by addressing those questions?
Sure. Thank you. So cataract is like wrinkles and gray hair. It is just part of aging process. So unfortunately for anybody, cataract is not something that can be stopped completely. But in general, UVA, UVB protection for your eyes, so any sunglasses, and they don't have to be expensive, will protect you from progression of cataracts somewhat. Also multivitamin, those are the two things that have been shown to really delay the progression of cataracts. But if your cancer treatment involved systemic steroids or have any type of radiation near the eyes or eye socket, that progression will continue relatively rapidly, unlike some people who have not been exposed to those agents. Regarding the refrigeration of eye medications, and these are just artificial tears, there's no need to refrigerate them, but they actually will soothe your eyes when they're cool. So that's just one trick that you can try. And yes, you can continue to refrigerate them even after you're done with cancer, because in general, those are things that you can do to help your eyes to feel better.
Excellent. Great question. Okay. Stephanie, our next question?
Our next question comes from Stephanie F. Your line is open.
Yes. Hello. This is an excellent seminar, Caroline. I'd like to know, I did have Adriamycin and Cytoxan and Taxol and Herceptin 9 years ago. I am wondering if my cataracts that I recently had surgery with was developed due to the Adriamycin and Cytoxan and Taxol. 2 months of Adriamycin, 2 months of Taxol, and 3 months of 2 months of Cytoxan and a year of Herceptin. My second question was, I lost all my eyelashes and my eyebrows. And do they ever come back? Because it hardly seems to be coming back. It's 9 years ago.
And what type of cancer did you have, just so we're all clear?
I had breast cancer.
Okay, excellent. Okay, Stephanie, good to have you on the call. Thank you for your remarks. And Dr. Gumbels, could you address that question?
Sure. You know, I think when you're that many years out of cancer management, it's always a little bit difficult to know the overlap of what is normal aging progression and what is treatment-induced therapies. There are certain kinds of cataracts, for instance, posterior subcapsular. We know those are often associated with steroid use and radiation. And more often than not, those cataracts develop very atypically in terms of age and timing in relation to the therapies that the patient has. And so while I don't think anyone can absolutely tell you that this is necessarily due from your treatment or from normal aging, I think it's generally safer that the longer you're farther out, the more likely that aging contributes to things. I think one drug that people often forget as part of their cancer management that is most likely to affect their cataracts is, in fact, steroids, and they're very well recognized as contributing to cataract development, yet we don't often think about them in the regimen of things. We don't think about them as, quote, chemotherapy, but not infrequently patients develop a lot of cataracts secondary to that particular medication, especially if they were on high dose for a long period of time. As it relates to eyelashes, eyebrows, more often than not, they do come back, but they may come back very thin. They may come back in a different color, not unlike hair that we have in other areas as well. Some people have tried. So there are certain drops on the market that are actually promoted as making thicker, longer eyelashes. There isn't a lot of data out there in the cancer literature about using that sort of post-chemotherapy-wise, but there are some attempts to do that in the population, in the patient population that we're talking about. But more often than not, you'll find that the eyelashes and eyebrows come back, but thinner than they were previously.
And Dr. Gumbos, would you suggest that she then, well, she probably is seeing her oncologist on a regular basis, just mention these concerns and then also go to her eye care provider about her eyelashes and eyebrows?
Yeah, and I think here, again, this is the perfect sort of scenario we've talked about. If you have an eye care provider who is familiar with the therapies that she's on, has a good working communication with her oncologist, and if there's a decision to sort of try some drops or something along those lines, I clear these things first and foremost with the medical oncologist. We pick up the phone. We say, is this acceptable to you? Do you have any issues or concerns? This is the the pharmacology of the medication that I'm proposing. That's very important in this whole process, is to make sure everyone's in the loop.
Could I add one thing?
Yes. Oh, please, yes.
So it goes back to the communication issue I was talking about earlier. And one thing that I forgot to mention is it might be a good idea to get a baseline eye exam when you're starting your treatments, because then you can actually look back and say, yes, I had an examination when I started, and now 9 years later my cataracts are worse. And as I look back, well, they're probably about the right rate of a normal cataract versus not having anything to compare to when you start your therapy. So if you have the opportunity or think of it to get a baseline examination before you start all these treatments, will be good in the future to go back and kind of check on that.
That's an excellent point. And actually, Stephanie, you may have had an eye exam actually just at some point along the way, so that would be good to go back to that. And your question is really helping many others on the call who may just be starting treatment, and it might be a nice opportunity for them to have that eye check. And, well, I guess we should ask them, in terms of the general population on the call as well, because it could be caregivers on the call, how often should people be having eye checks? And Dr. Marr, do you want to say a little bit about that?
Well, I think that as long as there's no pressing issues, it should be a kind of a routine format. Now, if they have specific issues where they're starting medications that may cause problems with the eyes, then depending on that medication, you could make a regimen. But I would say at least an annual check if everything is going fine and they're not having any symptoms. If they start to develop issues, then, you know, you can increase the frequency to, you know, 3 to 4 times a year, depending on what exactly is going on in their treatment.
And we have a question from one of our online participants, from Anne. Would my optometrist be able to pick up vision changes related to my cancer treatment, or should I see an ophthalmologist? So the concept of the differences in expertise and in terms of this our conversation today. Dr. Kim, could you address that question?
Sure. Your local optometrists are good for general things, glasses changes, updating your what we call refractive error, so normal age-related changes of your vision. And if you are the ones who have survived cancer and doing well, and you've been out many, many years, and that might be a reasonable option, especially if you don't have an ophthalmologist close by where you live. However, I would encourage everyone, if you are on active treatment, that it is really important to be evaluated by an ophthalmologist, ophthalmologists who have medical training as well as who are surgically trained, who can help you in a variety of ways that optometrists simply cannot.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, thank you very much. And our next question, Stephanie?
Our next question comes from Barbara W. Your line is open.
All right. I'm on aromatase. This is about the aromatase inhibitors. I'm on exemestane, which is aromatase. And I'd like to know about the changes with that that can take place. I also have retinitis pigmentosa, so I'm interested in knowing. And just to add on, like 12 years ago, I had I was on a different aromatase inhibitor for a previous breast cancer. So I'm just trying to find out the effects of that. And I've already had my cataracts removed. So I don't know if I'm on the right aromatase inhibitor or not.
Okay, well, so a couple of questions here. So I'm going to ask the ophthalmologist to address your JELA question about just the impact of these products on your eyes, and Dr. Fleischman also, if you want to comment as well. And then we do recommend that you go back to your treating healthcare team in terms of which product you should be taking in terms of your treatment for your breast cancer. Dr. Fleischman, do you want to start just by this just in general, just a general comment about this question?
Often now, many of the medications that are used in long-term survivors work for a long time and sometimes less than that, and they need to be switched. We know that aromatase inhibitors and a lot of the hormonal treatments are associated with dry eyes, particularly during the time that you take them and maybe a little bit afterwards. Whether the agent you're taking is the right one for you is impossible to tell from a call, and that really needs to be discussed with your medical oncologist. But the association with dry eyes has been pretty well established over the years.
Excellent. Thank you. And do any of the other speakers want to just address the general question about the just the impact of these products on eyes? And
I think that is true, as was mentioned by Dr. Fleischman. Dry eyes is one of the most important side effects of aromatase inhibitors. There are other reports of bleeding in the retina and sort of the vitreous gels coming down so that you see flashes and floaters. These sort of cases have been described, but in general it is the dryness of the eyes, as well as, you know, everything dries, dry mouth, dry eyes, so the use of lubricating regimen would be helpful for those patients.
Excellent. So, Barbara, I hope you'll take this information back to your treating healthcare team. Actually, it's an excellent question, and we hope we've given you some additional questions to ask your healthcare team in terms of just clarifying for yourself. And our next question, Stephanie?
Our next question comes from Jackie Kay. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. I believe my cataract questions were answered by the first two callers, so thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jackie. Okay. Our next question, then?
Our next question comes from Naraya A. Your line is open.
Hello. Yes.
Hello. Hi.
I just had a question about my son. He has had an optic pathway glioma diagnosed at 6 months of age, and has been on chemotherapy his whole life. He's almost 9 years old. Most recently, we did some trials of MEK inhibitors, which can cause vision problems. He's already legally blind in one eye and has partial vision in the left, so of course this was sort of a scary treatment to try, but more targeted, so we were hopeful that it would work for him. While on the trametinib, which is usually given to adults, we tried it for my son's tumor, and he did lose more vision. And he was losing more and more every month. They were checking for specific problems that can be caused by the chemo, and they didn't feel that.
And your question?
My question is, will he get some of his vision back? It started to get better once we got off of it. We were on it for 2 months. I'm hoping it will continue to get better with time. Is that what you've seen, or what you could tell me?
Okay, well, thank you for your question, Maria. It's an excellent question. We definitely would want you to go back to your treating healthcare team because, of course, it has to do with your own son's particular medical treatment. However, I'm going to ask Dr. Gumbos if there's anything you wish to help with Maria in terms of informing her questions or that might help her in focusing her questions for her healthcare team.
Right. Well, this is, you know, again, going back to a whole new class of medications that we're treating, whether it's more directed, targeted chemotherapy, biologics, if we have specific agents that are targeting or blocking certain pathways, these all have newer and different complications than we've not seen previously. So in her particular case, it's highly complicated because the glioma is also affecting vision, and we're also dealing in a pediatric population, and so it further complicates things because, as you know, it's not common to see newer medications specifically given in the pediatric population, and more specifically, many of these drugs are not even tested in the pediatric population. So my general approach for someone like that would be, you definitely want to be treated in someone who is in very close communication with her primary oncologist, the person who is giving her that medication or giving her son that medication. You definitely want to be in a well-experienced group of doctors because it's very likely that there are many potential issues, retina, optic nerve, etc., that may have the potential to cause problems. And this is a definite scenario where very close surveillance, perhaps, you know, again, we were talking about what's the frequency of a normal eye exam. This may be a scenario where every month you may want to be coming in and being checked out. Again, I'm not talking about this specific case, but it's the scenario where there are many unknowns. And so this is where frequency, surveillance, specialized testing, communication, and multidisciplinary team approach are critical if you're going to not only get the objective that you want for the glioma or the tumor, but make sure that you don't get any inherited side effects. Fortunately for many, although not all, many of the newer drugs that we're seeing, the targeted chemotherapeutic agents, some of the biologics, some of these targeted inhibitors, many of the complications are reversible, but there are some that can be permanent and sight-threatening and blinding. And so it's out of the scope of this particular discussion. You have to know exactly what the toxicity is that we were talking about.
So we definitely, Maria, want you to go back to your son's treating healthcare team and really ask these questions. And I think Dr. Gumbos has given some focus to that, and I appreciate that very much. Very helpful, I hope, to Maria.
Could I also make one comment?
Yes. Oh, please, yes.
So with her problem specifically, the visual loss can be, as Dr. Gumbos pointed out, can be caused by two things. One, a side effect from the medication that may be reversible or not, and two, from the actual disease itself in the optic pathway. And so the key thing for the ophthalmologist to sort out is which is causing the visual changes, and that will give her more insight on how reversible or not reversible that is.
And could we just discuss in general, as many of our speakers are at, represent, the major cancer centers in the country, and I'm just wondering for something like this, in terms of a question like this, in terms of the actual care, do we sometimes recommend someone go beyond a small community hospital and really consider going to a larger NCI center for really a second opinion or consult just to be sure that that one's getting all one's answers, all one's questions answered. And Dr. Gombos, do you want to address that? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. First of all, let me emphasize that there is great care in communities. I mean, we have wonderful colleagues that are in many towns, and I have wonderful colleagues in many small and mid-sized cities throughout the region where I practice. That said, there are newer drugs that they don't even have names. They have drug numbers. And when you're on a clinical trial or when there are multiple potential toxicities like the ones that Dr. Marr was pointing out, tumor versus a new drug, or a scenario where it's not used in its routine FDA-approved approach, those are the scenarios where perhaps a second opinion or perhaps even the local ophthalmologist contacting someone in a tertiary center can be of benefit. We know that many patients don't have the ability or the resources to go to larger tertiary care centers in big communities, but we're all amenable and accessible to providing some general approaches that we do. And certainly the more complex the scenario is or the more unique the regimen is, there may be some benefit in doing exactly what you suggested.
Thank you. And we have a question from one of our online participants, from Linda. I received radiation to my left eye orbit in September due to MALT lymphoma. The eyelashes and eyebrows have mostly returned. Biggest problem seems to be when I go outside when it is windy or cold, as my eye will start running and then the nose starts running. Do you think this will be long-term, or could this be due to dry eye? I do wear sunglasses, which does help some with the wind. Had recent visit with my ophthalmologist who did biopsy, and there is no cornea damage, but he did see small cataracts. Thanks. So
I could address that.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Mark.
So lymphoma is usually a radiation to the lymphoma in the orbit area is usually a low dose radiation compared to some other radiation treatments for other types of tumors because lymphoma is responsive. The effects of her having the reflex tearing is from dry eyes, so it does decrease the baseline tear production, and she'll have some reflex tearing because of that. The idea of using sunglasses to kind of shield the eye from the wind is a good idea. Also, using prophylactic, meaning using drops before she goes into those environments, is a good idea to kind of protect her from that easily drying out. And typically, with lymphoma patients, those symptoms improve. How much improvement is variable among patients, but they do get better with time.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I hope that was helpful to you, Linda, and I hope you'll take this information back to your treating healthcare team. And so we have a question from another one of our online participants, from Ellen. I have noticed my vision is becoming more cloudy. My physician said this may be a result of my chemotherapy treatment. Since my job requires me to drive long distances, is this something that can be stopped or treated with medication? So I'm going to ask everyone to weigh in on this one because it actually is both, it affects basically, of course, vision affects often one's work and driving long distances. So I'm going to ask Dr. Fleischman if he would start with this. I'm going to ask everyone to weigh in on it because everyone will have a little bit of different perspective, and we hope this will help you, Ellen, to kind of come up with a plan for yourself and then go back to your treating physician. Dr. Fleischman?
When I hear this, the first thing I think of is this patient needs a really good ophthalmology exam with a dilated exam, and I would really advocate to go to an ophthalmologist who I knew was familiar with problems that come after cancer treatment or with cancer. The other thing that I've always felt helpful after the consults and the potential treatments is driving is the kind of thing that affects all of our lives. We need to have it to keep our independence, but we also need to be sure that we're safe. And I often have patients go to a local driving school that has a dual control car and spend time for one lesson with an instructor who can really check to make sure that a person is really safe to drive after their cancer treatment. So from the technical point of view, I would certainly want an ophthalmology consult, but as an aside, that's always something we need to keep in mind to make sure that we're all safe on the road.
Excellent. Thank you. And Dr. Kim?
All right, so blurry vision secondary to cataracts certainly can be addressed surgically. The timing of surgery depends on how that cataract and the person's vision affect that person's quality of life. So that's going to be different threshold for someone who needs to drive for work versus someone who may not have that much activities that require such sharp vision per se. So activities of daily living and may push the caller's cataract surgery timing earlier than someone who may have the same vision and impact with cataract, the level of cataract, but have a different sense of what their vision impairment is due to their cataract. So going to a local ophthalmologist and having a thorough examination, discussing the details of what cataract surgery entails, and really communicating with the ophthalmologist your daily life's importance in terms of driving may help the ophthalmologist to determine the timing of surgery.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much. Dr. Gumbos, do you want to comment on this as well?
Sure. Well, I think the one thing, again, I would reemphasize, and I think this does point out, is you can't know from any symptom how minor or severe it is. That's sort of reemphasizing what Dr. Kim has said early on. It is so critical that people take away from this conference that regardless of what you suspect or perceive those symptoms are related to, toxicity, age-related issues, radiation-induced problems, go have it checked out by an ophthalmologist who's aware of all the medications you're on and the treatments that you're on. For many things, there are potentially treatment modalities, whether it's surgical or medical treatments that are potentially available. We also need to be aware that patients develop issues related to their eyes completely unrelated to their cancer management. And here again, this is why it's so critical to have these things properly sorted out. I would also tell individuals that the last thing anyone wants is to have any sort of accident due to visual impairment related to driving. So there are very specific criteria with which people are allowed to drive in each state, and your ophthalmologist knows those criteria. And it's important that those criteria, you know, continue to be met. By all means, if there is something that is amenable to surgery, et cetera, your ophthalmologist will be able to guide you as it relates to the impact that it's having on your quality of life, whether surgery or surgical intervention is indicated.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gumbos. And Dr. Marr, did you want to add?
I would just make a quick statement that visual loss from cataracts is usually reversible, and that's the great thing about cataracts is that, you know, we do have a nice surgical procedure that does reverse it. The thing that Dr. Kim was trying to emphasize is that when the risks of the surgery to get, because all surgeries have risk, when the risk of a cataract surgery is less than the benefit that you'll get, so if you get more benefit than the risk that you're going to take, that's the time to do the operation. And if these things are influencing your life, the nice thing is if it's all because of the cataract, and sometimes it's a combination of cataract and something else, but if it's all because of the cataract, it's reversible. And so you just have to find out when's the good time to act on that. And so from a cataract standpoint, the nice thing to know, and everybody should feel comfortable, that most of the time those surgeries go well and they can reverse some of the visual impairment from it.
Ms. Evelyn, do you want to comment on just the issues of the psychosocial issues and the workplace accommodation and things like that?
Absolutely. So just to switch tracks for a moment, I think, of course, after checking in with your own treating team and any ophthalmologists, another option, of course, is also to connect with others in similar situations for their insight. That's never, of course, a substitute for medical advice or guidance, but I think if there's any related feelings you might have about your experiences, it can be extremely helpful to share those experiences and get the support of other people who can relate. And so we often recommend support groups as one wonderful way to do that. And, of course, in terms of cancer care services, that can be done by telephone or online for those folks who don't live near the New York City area.
Excellent. Thank you. And if anyone has concerns in as the situation was just described in terms of just driving and safety, that you can actually discuss that probably first with one of our oncology social workers here in terms of just their workplaces often can accommodate while these things are being worked up and evaluated for your safety. So that's something just to think about. But first I would discuss it with your physician and, of course, an oncology social worker. Now, I do want to thank everyone for your participation on this call today. I want to thank our speakers who've been really outstanding on this call today, really outstanding speakers, really. And I want to thank all of you who've asked such great questions, both on the phone and online. I know there are more questions that we haven't gotten to, so I did promise to tell you how you'd get your questions answered. So if you have a question that, a medically focused question that has not been answered, then I very much encourage you to contact the National Cancer Institute, and their number is 1-800-813-4-CANCER. And it's a wonderful resource for all of you to utilize and always a great resource to have for you. And if you also have a question really that has to do with getting practical financial assistance from cancer care or speaking to one of our social workers for counseling services or joining a support group or participating in one of our upcoming workshops or our accessing our publications or website, I really recommend that you contact Cancer Care at 1-800-813-4673. Again, 1-800-813-4673. And also I would recommend that you also, you know, also for those of you who are international, that you would contact or anyone can contact our website at www.cancercare.org. And you can actually post your question and connect with one of our social workers in that way as well. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today. You've been an extraordinary group, I have to say. This is a call that we are going to try to get to do more often. You really had really great questions, obviously great interest in this program, and I want to thank you all. And most importantly, as we're about to conclude the program, I don't want anyone to think that you're alone in coping with in coping with cancer or with these visual issues that you're confronting. I want you to know that you're now part of the cancer care community and that we're here to help you and that we're here to help you ongoing. And so we're simply a phone call away or visiting our website. So you are now part of our community and we're there to help you. Thank you all, and I want to wish you all a very fine day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may now disconnect, and everyone have a wonderful day.